Welcome to the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us today. It is June 12th, 2017. I can't believe we're in June, you guys. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here on the West Coast. We're in Eugene. I want to thank you for joining us and reminding your friends to share our station. We're a growing station. You can find us on TuneIn Radio on UCY TV on TuneIn. We're live there, so we're 8 to 9 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Or you can catch us on the podcast on YouTube and just go to UCY TV. And you can follow a lot of their shows because they're great. But I do want to make a brief announcement before we start speaking with our guest. We're going to start doing something a little bit different with my radio show starting next week. Barry Prince, who has been a guest on my show a few times, is going to be taking over Mondays. So we're going to see if he likes it before we give him, you know, his own radio show. He'll try my show for the next few weeks. If he digs this time and wants to keep it, he's welcome to it. And I'll be on Tuesday through Friday, and I'm definitely going to make a new bumper if he takes over, which I'm going to make one anyways. I've been talking about it since school started. So thanks for waiting for me to get through school. I'm doing excellently, by the way. But let me get into our interview, because this morning our guest is Sheila Park. She's returned with us before. She's an activist. And I don't remember her saying this, or maybe we briefed over it, but she's actually a professor who left the school system. Right, Sheila?
That's right.
Well, thank you for joining us, man. And tell me about that first. Why did you leave? Because you know what? When I was younger, I wanted to get into school and education, and I looked into it and it went, I can't do that. So why did you leave?
Why did I get into it in the first place? Let's do that for a minute. I'm sure that in those years I went into it because, for at least one reason, that many women went into it because it was like what women did, nurses, teachers, and secretaries. And so I became a teacher. I got a master's degree at Columbia, and I taught in a school outside Harlem, third grade. And I don't remember who called the strike, but then there was a strike in New York City, and it was a strike about allowing teachers to strike because teachers were not allowed to strike in those years. So I went on strike. They told us we would never teach again, and I said, too bad. And anyhow, we all went on strike, and nothing happened. Some of this I'm a little bit, is close to me now, because I just took a course about racism, about white people challenging racism, and I wrote some of my own story. It was one of the assignments. And so here I am in the third grade, and I hated, and with, you know, all the kids were black, and all the teachers and the principal were white, and I could not tolerate how the teachers talked about the students in the teacher's room. I could not tolerate. I also, as I was writing this maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, don't remember speaking up. So anyhow, so that was like, looking back at that history wasn't too much fun, and I was weeping as I typed. So I went and moved there with my, you know, former husband, and we went to Princeton. And his advisor wanted me to be the first woman to apply to Princeton. Those were in those years, but I didn't want to have any part of it. I hated Princeton. It was this worst white, it was just this all-white town. And so, anyhow, I came back to Boston, and I got a doctorate in education from BU, and I thought I would change the system. I thought, well, I've been to, you know, really good schools all over the world, all over the country, best in the world, and I didn't learn anything. And so I wanted to change the system, and then I began to notice that the system was changing me, although I had a chance to do some good things, like I assigned good readings to my students. I was able to, those were the years when there were freedom schools all over Roxbury and Boston, and I was able to persuade the powers that be at BU that I could put some of my student teachers who were interested into the freedom schools. So those are really exciting and wonderful things to be able to do, and I could assign Jonathan Coles' book, Death at an Early Age, and so I could do all of those things. And yet I wanted to leave. I just wanted to leave. And by then I was teaching teachers and teachers-to-be at graduate school someplace here. And I just walked out the door. And I got sober and clean. Many people usually do. I had a spiritual awakening is what I needed. I shouldn't leave it. I had a spiritual awakening. I said, I can't do this with my life 1 minute longer. And I walked out the door. But often people get clean and sober, and then they leave their careers. I did it in the opposite way. So that's the history, because I wanted to change it all. I wanted to change it. You know, the conversation that you and I were having before we went on the air.
Yeah, that's the reason that I actually have gone back to school, because I feel that there's a sense of urgency. I said this in my class the other day. Like, the reason I've changed my life really 100% is there is a sense of urgency. Like, I've been doing this radio show and then watching Trump get elected and just leave Katie open the bar, the doors, like, just leave it open. Just go ahead and pollute everybody. They have no complete understanding. It's really like looking second graders at the table. It frightened me. And I was like, Lord, I got to get into political science. I changed my major. I really am serious about, I'm going to actually speak out about community rights. Do you know about that?
No, tell me what you mean.
Oh, this is how the Price-Anderson Act, how the frackers, how they get into every community, and you can't do jack. It's the reason that people in St. Louis, just all they can do is go to the permit hearings. That's all the rights that we really have. I went to a seminar. I had a guest on a few weeks, Dr. Craig Kaufman, on talking about nature's rights, essentially, is what we got into. And then he mentioned the democracy school. So I went to it. It happened to be here in Eugene. I just did it last weekend. And they maybe 2 weeks ago, they talked about community rights are not granted. We are considered child-parent relationship with the state. Municipalities have a child-parent relationship. If the parent says you have to do it, you have to do it. And commerce has the right to challenge states to force them to allow them to take their extract profit out of that municipality if they want, unless you have community rights. So people need to gather. I'll give you the website, and then I want to get on to what I really want to talk to you about. The website is this. CELDEF, CELDEF, community. It's called Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDEF.org. And people can go and learn about community rights themselves. I encourage every person, and I'm going to keep talking about it, because once you get community rights, once you get the state to acknowledge community rights, then we're on legal standing with commerce and we can block them. We say we can pass in our own Bill of Rights as a community that says we have a right to a healthy life. They're so polluting.
How do you get the states to pass it? Once you get the states
Well, what you have to do, this is the thing, it takes legwork. You have to knock on doors, you have to petition, you have to get a petition enough so that everybody in your little county and your city wants to have some community rights, and you get you establish a bill of rights, and you say these are the basic things that we think we want to have as a, and you get enough signatures, you bring it to the city council, you bring it to the state, and you get the state to pass it. If you get the state, then you have to get all the counties, but you start county by county, and everybody's like, here in Oregon, they used a small little piece of language in our constitution to win against Ariel Spring in Newport, Oregon. Our constitution happened to have said, in Oregon, we have the right to a healthy life. A little phrase, and
that's
those counties, and but you have to have the community, the municipal rights. Once your municipality is acknowledged at the state level, then the commerce, then you're equal with commerce. Do you get what I'm saying? It's really a vital little. This is how Ecuador just passed. That's how they passed their constitution. This is how they're fighting off the invasion of the oil companies. This is why we're seeing, you know, disruption down there, because people are beginning to get it. Like in New Zealand, they passed the rights of the river to be considered an entity, nature rights. It's a really good concept. And it goes to the heart of what we wanted to talk about, because that's saving nature's rights. But I want to talk to you because you've been around the block a lot. You're very clear thinking, and I can't believe in all this talk about the Paris Agreement, the United States being kicked out. There is not one group of people who's talking, except there's, you know, a few of the scientists, like Dr. Caldicott will speak out whenever she's allowed to be on public, but nobody who is allowed to be speaking publicly can talk about the massive level of contamination that Fukushima is putting out, more contamination than all the nuclear bombs ever will, really, when we think about the total amount of it. Between Fukushima, Chernobyl, and Hanford, we don't need the Third World War because they're already doing it to us.
Yeah, Lonnie and I totally agree with this to your listeners. We just totally agree with this, what she's saying. I totally agree with her. And
why? Why, Sheila? What have you seen? What is
paid? Always think of the follow the money. Because why else is, you know, I mean, like the nation. Let's go after the nation first. The nation has never, to my knowledge, and I watch it carefully, said one peep about against nuclear power. Not one peep. Rebecca Solnit, whom I love and adore, although that's getting challenged these days by some of her writings, wrote a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous piece about the climate crisis. Nuclear power never got mentioned once. David Zirin, whom I love all, writes for The Nation about politics and sports. I do not care about sports. I have no interest in sports whatsoever. And I love his columns about, and I have gone after him. I cannot even tell you I have gone after him with tweets, with emails, with in person when he came to Boston, saying to him, please write about the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. Get them moved out of Japan. You write about the Olympics all the time. Never has he written one single word about it. I tweet, I send emails to Katrina, whatever her last name is, the editor of The Nation. Nothing, 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 nothing.
Just why? The Nation is the so-called liberal magazine, right? Like, that's the super lefty magazine is The Nation, right?
Right. Not one peep about nuclear power.
Well, what's her history? Who is she married to? What's her husband? Why is she so silent? Is she part of them?
I don't know. And that Rebecca Solnit and Dave Zirin are part of this and are willing to keep this silent for their goddamn jobs. That is the thing that, you know, is so unbelievable to me. That they are willing to keep their jobs, need to keep their jobs, think they need to keep their jobs with that huge lie of silence. You know, there are the sins of commission and the sins of omission.
Well, you know, the only thing they've talked about really is they've talked about right now. They just did a story 7 days ago talking about Trump's handling of North Korea is going to lead us to nuclear war.
I'm sorry, say that again.
This is the title. 7 days ago, they did a story promoting, saying that blaming Trump's handling of North Korea is going to lead us straight into a into nuclear disaster, as if we don't already have a nuclear disaster.
The nation that did that, you're saying?
Yes. What an outrage.
Yeah, wow. I mean, they're awful beyond awful. And I don't know what we're supposed to do about this, except, I mean, I want to say this publicly over and over and over. Do not trust a word the nation says, because they don't ever mention the two words nuclear power, or I'm against nuclear power.
Huh. They have a whole thing on climate change.
Right. Very big on climate change. Omitting those words, nuclear power. Those are the words that get omitted. I mean, when everybody is going crazy now because Trump took us out of Paris, has any of those people, individuals or groups or corporations or any of them said one word about nuclear power? You know, and I know, not one word. We knew that from when Paris happened, there wasn't anything about nuclear power. And we were supposed to be glad that it wasn't as bad as it could have been. I mean, you know.
Wow. Well, there has to be somebody there who is connected to nuclear power. I mean, that's just the way it is. Or maybe it's actually a front from the CIA. Who the hell knows? I mean, this is the weird part about our whole entire mentality now. We've been gaslit so many times now, we don't even know. We have no idea what's true, what's not. We could be living in the Truman Show.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, this is how much there's no battered country shelter to go to. You know what I mean? Like, we have to just figure our way out of it. I mean, it's not just the nation, not to pick on the nation. We have television blaring 24 hours a day. And in all this climate thing, they never talked about the effects of Chernobyl, Hanford. None of it has even Dr. Busby, when he was on my radio show and I interviewed him, he thought, well, that's an interesting idea. That's never actually really been studied. And I'm like, I hope you're wrong. I hope somebody's studying it right now.
Studying what?
The relationship between I don't know how anybody can deny that the nuclear contamination that we have bombarded our planet with for the last 70 years, and especially since Fukushima threw us off the edge, with Hanford now going to top Fukushima. But, you know, how they can deny that it is not contributing to climate change is beyond me. It's killing the biota in the ocean. We're pouring all of our nuclear contamination all over the planet into the ocean. We are discovering so much of it. It's not just the pollution. We are refusing to acknowledge the nuclear contamination in the ocean, in our water, and how, and everything. Everything. And no one is, it really, we should be having major scientific symposiums on how we're going to get this out of our food supply and our water. And I've interviewed people who say it's very easy, that we have solutions.
You can't get it out of the food supply or the water supply of the air. It's too late. It's really over for that. The point is, while they're talking about renewables, which I'm all for, they're talking about nuclear power in the same breath. Let's go to Bernie Sanders. Let's not only pick on the nation. I got a few more I want to talk about.
Good. I'm with you. I'm probably with you on the Mr. Bernie.
Mr. Bernie. Yeah. I did vote for him in the primary. I did not vote for him in the election. And I'm sorry I voted for him even in the primary. I can't remember if I must have known about him in nuclear power by then. So Bernie Sanders, first of all, well, let me go first. So the main villain is Bill McKibben, as far as I'm concerned. He runs the biggest, most profitable. He is the face of 350.org. They love him. They kiss his wrist, his hand, whatever people kiss. I won't say what I think they really kiss. And he is not, I have him on tape twice saying that we need nuclear power.
Yes.
To get climate
crisis. Mimi Gurman has asked him directly, and he is like, well, They want to get off coal first. And, you know, this is really, you want to know the whole, this is what I think is the mentality behind the McGibbon philosophy. We're already contaminated with nuclear. We can't even test for plutonium. We have so much plutonium, which lasts 24,500 years, the half-life. We're already contaminated with it. We're already accumulating it to the point of utter destruction. So what's the point? Let's just save the atmosphere and shut down coal. What they're denying is the use of coal in creating nuclear. Nuclear is not clean. It uses every nuclear power plant uses so much fossil fuel just to build it and maintain it in perpetuity. It outweighs all the savings it uses in the 20 to 30, maybe even 40 years of use. It's such a lie. That's what he's denying.
It's unclear to me what he's doing. I confronted him one-to-one also publicly when he was here in Cambridge a few years ago.
Good for you.
He stood in this very defensive stance with his arms crossed across his chest. And interestingly to me, the moderator let me go at him for quite some time until she set it down or whatever she said. And also, I came late. Somebody had just sent me an email that said, Bill McKibben is over at Lesley College. Go there now. And I said, oh, my God, and I live 5 minutes from there. So I went, and he was in a very small auditorium. And when he got up to speak, I went in and sat in his seat. So I thought, I'd like that I could sit in his seat and tell the truth while he was up in the podium telling more lies. And, you know, he said, I just said to him, why don't you just add nuclear to coal, oil, gas, and make it King Kong, as the anti-nuclear say. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. I've spent my whole life working against fossil fuels, blah, 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 blah. And I said, you know, some of us think that you don't want to alienate James Hansen. Is that why you don't want to go against it? And he didn't. I don't know what he said about that. I mean, he never said anything decent about anything. And then he said, I've done all this work in fossil fuels. I don't want to do any more on nuclear power. I'm not going to add nuclear power to it. And I said, we've done all the work on nuclear power. We don't need you to do any work against it. We need you to talk about it and include it. I said, everybody I know in nuclear power includes the climate crisis, and we're against fracking and fossil fuels and all the things that you're against, but we're against one more very important item, like you said, the carbon footprint of nuclear power and its other footprint. He never gave an inch, never, never, never gave an inch. I continue to tweet him all the time and send him emails to no avail. How about the Pope? The Pope, he had this eloquent encyclical about the climate crisis, never, never said a peep. James Hansen was running around the whole world before Paris telling us how much we needed small modular reactors to solve the climate crisis.
The reason they're doing that is so they can shut down coal. They want to have a victory. It's victory. You don't get it. They really have this belief in this one-drop plutonium theory. This is what I call it, the one-drop plutonium theory. If they can get the victory of shutting down coal, they believe that they will have a greater standing as environmentalists, and then they can pivot and say, okay, now we're going to join you guys and shut down nuclear. We're going to create a new type of energy because we have these solutions out there. They're not these people are maliciously, insanely greedy. And I think that like someone like McKibben, he has chosen, he wants to be alive and rich, rather than dead and poor.
A rich, powerful, and famous.
This is my thing against Bernie Sanders. You want me to tell you, talk about Mr. Bernie? Like, I was willing to forego all of his other, like, silences and everything, because no one gets to the White House on a good nuclear stance. Let's just be clear. He sucks on it. No one gets to the White House saying that you want to shut them all down. You wouldn't even make it to the primary. But the fact that he did not walk out of that convention after having obviously been shook down by the crime family that runs the country, and he got a threat to his life, he should have been willing to take the bullet and say, hey, look, they're threatening me and my family and my kids, and we're out of here, and he should have left. And for him to sell us the Democratic Party just is like, ugh.
But I want to talk about Bernie and nuclear power. He was very awful about nuclear power. And I don't care if he could never get to the White House. If he mentioned nuclear power, then he shouldn't have run for the White House. You don't lie, that's as far as I'm concerned, to get someplace where you want to go. If you have to do that from the beginning, I don't want to hear one word that you say. It's just not a good thing to do. So Bernie had this thing that when the nuclear power plant's licenses, you know, expired, there would be a moratorium. We wouldn't renew anybody, any plant's license when it expired. Nice, nice, really nice, Bernie. And everybody went around, the whole fucking left went around, sorry, talking about how wonderful his moratorium was. And I did research for months on this. So some of the plans weren't going to have their license expire for 34 years or 36 years or 38 years. What kind of nuclear power plant is that? When Bernie announced his thing to run for president, guess who was one of the people standing there with him? Bill McKibben, of course, the Vermont connection. So Bernie's nuclear power plant was non-existent. It was a lie from beginning to end. When he got to New York and was trying to win the primary, he came out very strong about closing Indian Point. That was just a phony baloney thing so that he could try to win the New York primary. And then he actually came out saying some really important things about nuclear power, and then it was as though he had never said them. He went back to the moratorium. That's not a nuclear power plant. It's just evil lies out of his mouth. I do not listen to any word that Bernie Sanders says.
Would you repeat that again? Would you repeat that exactly what he did again, very shortly? He started to say,
Let me say this, I will say it again slowly and carefully. But everybody listening should go just Google my paper, which is, Dear Bernie, your nuclear power plan is unacceptable. Here's why. And I lay it out in many, many, many pages with all kinds of research and charts and anything you could ask for. So Bernie's was to do a moratorium. This is what you want me to repeat, right, about the moratorium?
Yeah, well, I know that he was calling for moratorium, but then
All right, Lonnie, so tell me in your words what you thought it was for.
Well, I thought that he was like the moratorium, that he was not going to renew any nuclear power facilities at all and not approve any more licenses and cause a big change to cause the nuclear industry to have much greater oversight.
Well, that's what he said. He was going to not renew anybody's licenses, and that would be the moratorium. But I'm telling you, some of those licenses didn't expire until 34 or 36 or 32 years from now.
I know, but I hear it. I found your letter, by the way. Let me open it up. Let's see it.
What kind of plan is that? It's a non-existent bunch of lies. In 32 years, you're going to give them a moratorium? Thanks a lot, Bernie.
Saying we have to close Indian Point now. Okay. Tragically, though, your memoriam on combating climate change to save the planet is not in sync. Do you mind if I read this?
No, go right ahead.
Is it too long? Is it super long?
Some of it.
Okay, well, let me skip through it. It says, your nuclear power plant is unacceptable. Here's why. This must be only the beginning. You have clearly stated that nuclear power is very dangerous and there is no good way to store nuclear waste and the cure is worse than the disease. Okay, that's all good. You have called for a moratorium on nuclear power plant renewal licenses when each current license expires. I am asking you to join our movement in calling for all nuclear power plants, NPPs, in the United States to close now. I love it that you use their acronyms. Your nuclear power moratorium will allow NPPs 24 years, 23, that's how many there are? Will continue to operate 38 years, will allow them to continue to operate 38 years, and so on, beginning to count from 2017 when you would be president if elected. 27 MPPs will be open for many years since your moratorium is in place, some as long as 3 decades. So this is why he was considered acceptable, though, because he was not radical and demanding that they all be closed. This is how he could get elected. Do you get what I'm saying? This is considered to be.
Nobody did the research to find out how horrible it was that They just saw the word moratorium and said, oh, wonderful, they didn't see how long it was going to take. That's like a criminal lie.
But I think people did understand it was going to take a long time. But to them, 38 years is not a long time. Do you understand?
Who's them?
The people that are, like the political insiders, the people who were like, people understood that it was going to be another like 20 years. Like, none of this stuff closes down quickly. They're not closing it down quickly. You know why they're not closing it down quickly? They have no plans to close it down. Have you ever looked have you looked at the budget of the DOE? They have less, the last time I checked, there was less than $5,000 assigned to the closure of nuclear power plants under safe conditions. They don't plan on closing them down unless there's an emergency.
Why did the...
Excuse me, Sheila, we're not hearing you. I don't know where you've moved, if you have moved in your house or something, but we can't hear you. Come a little closer.
Why did the left buy into what Bernie said about moratoriums?
My guess is they want to be alive. We're not talking about the reality of what this is talking about. This is battery and coercion. This is literally look, I interviewed Patty Amino on my radio show. She told me her brakes were cut. The things like this, now there's no proving that it caused by them, but look, anybody who wants to talk about a nuclear has issues. Why is that? Why are people afraid to talk about it? Why are we afraid to talk about the elephant in the room? Why are these people in the media willing to keep their trap shut? It is not only killing our children, it's killing our planet. It's time for Bill McKibben to come clean and say, you know what? I can't talk about it. Oh, you want to know this? Let's talk about the Vandenhoevel dad. I found out why she does not talk about it. Her dad is a partner. The Nation magazine. This is what I'm saying. Yes, because the fingers of coercion are deep. It's this, Struken Lavin. That's where her dad works. He's an American law firm based in New York, offices in Los Angeles, Miami, Washington, D.C. And they are transactional and litigation guidance to leading multinational corporations, financial institutions, investment banks, private equity firms in the U.S. and abroad. Capital market securities, commercial finance, mergers, acquisitions, joint ventures, private equity, blah, blah. Let's listen to this. Energy and project finance. And they also do environmental law because they probably have to protect their clients when they're doing stuff. So this is why she won't talk about them, because her dad is one of the polluters and protects them.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Thank you, Lonnie.
So that's how easy it is. It's like, let's look and see who your family is, because why wouldn't someone speak out? I mean, let's just talk reality. These people that are like, they look at us literally. We literally are. This whole thing, do you know, you've heard of mitigation banks, right?
No, tell me.
Oh, God. I'm doing a paper on mitigation banking. There's a great documentary, which you have to be at a university to be able to see it. You can't request it. It's expensive. One of those like educational documentary things, you know, the system. Anyways, I saw it at school. It's called Mitigation Banking, but you can find out about mitigation banking. Basically, they sell the environment. Like, what they do is they say, in fact, they've done this all over South America. They have bought up, mitigation banks have bought entire huge swaths of land, and they're huge landowners down in South America. And they've cut up the land of the jungle, and they are selling stocks on species that are endangered due to the encroachment from civilization. So what they do is they sell stock to polluters, and then polluters get to say, hey, we're a green company because we're investing in the Amazon. We're protecting the Amazon. It is. And the more that they get encroached on, the higher the stock goes up.
Unbelievable story.
But this is billions of dollars. And these guys believe that they're helping create solutions because at a certain point, it's going to break the bank. At a certain point, you lose your investment if you keep encroaching on the environment. So it encourages the rich people to not destroy everything. Seriously. And so, yes. The thing is, it's not insane. We're just battered. People can heal. This is the good part about human beings. This is why I say happiness is greater than fear. Love is greater than fear, and happiness is resistance. Because really, we're not meant to like have a miserable life and be slaves and just like, oh my God, we have to live in this horrible environment. I have interviewed a couple of at least one or two people on the show who say they know there are solutions to mitigate the soil and the air. As long as we just stop polluting, we could fix it. So we have an urgency, but you see, the problem with that is they have to figure out how to make the market work because we're still in a market-based society. So it's this whole thing about the control, like how do we get to the Bill McKibbins of the world? You know, I mean, to me, Bill McKibbins is like blaming the victims. His whole idea about overpopulation and just not talking about the reality of what's going on. And maybe he's not talking about the reality because he's hoping there is going to be mass die-offs of the population, because he's one of those people who believes that we shouldn't, you know, we should like eliminate the population.
I didn't know that about him, but it would make sense because he seems to be, you know, for everything else that's wrong in the world.
Well, let me see. I have an article here, A Finite Earth by Bill McKibben. He talks about the ever-increasing total, about 3 new people are born each second. Uh-huh. And he says, we've lived with the idea that there is a, quote, population bomb or an explosion, a population explosion, or at the very least, a population crisis since the mid-60s. You notice he calls it a bomb? I mean, it's quite annoying to me. I found this, I have to say, reading this, I'm doing an article on it. He said, the bad news is there are 6 billion people of us already. The number of the world strains to support for more. One more near doubling, 4 to 5 billion more people will double that strain. Will these be the 5 billion straws that snap the camel's back?
When is this written?
Let's see. I don't know. Let me still look in the back.
I don't know any of this about him. It makes me dislike him even more intensely.
This is from the Global Environmental Politics from Person to Planet, edited by Simone Nicholas and Paul Wapner by Paradigm Publishers in Boulder, London. And that's all the information I have. It's a part of a book. It's a chapter by Bill McKibben. You know what? I don't have it. It's an assignment. I beg your pardon. I can't cite it properly because it's just an assignment that I got. My teacher has just given us snippets of what he wants us to read on assignments of things that he's written. So I don't have the whole thing. But it's probably easily found. It's called A Finite Earth with a question mark, Bill McKibben. Probably pretty easy if you look for it to cite it.
I mean, you know, I just want to go back to Rebecca Solnit for a minute. Here's a woman who writes about me, mansplaining, which is, for me, one of the most brilliant things that was ever written in the world. And then she writes about climate crisis without mentioning nuclear power. What? That's an unforgivable act. Rebecca Solnit.
Yeah. None of them. In none of my work in my environmental politics, nuclear is brushed aside as a minor detail. I am not kidding you. All of the writings, there is very little of it. And actually, I think actually talking about it really raises people's ire. I mean, we have been so ingrained to ignore it and consider it to be a radical thought that nuclear contamination is, you know, like, oh, a nuclear war. Yes, that's horrible because we have this huge explosion, right? And we see it. That's what made Fukushima so shocking. We saw it exploded.
I just can't help but wonder if, you know, way back when Robert Lifton was talking about psychic numbing, these powers that be really know how bad the nuclear is, and they don't even want people to know how bad it is, because it would mean that, you know, everything would change if the public really knew what was going on about nuclear. Because the public doesn't know, Lonnie, because who owns the magazines? Who owns the corporate media? All these rich people who are fine with nuclear power. I always have these images that, you know, in a nuclear war or another Fukushima or something, they think they're going to go down into their bunkers with their families and where they stored all the water and whatever else they've stored, and their maids and butlers are going to come up and pick wild blueberries for them to eat. I mean, I think they're safe. I think they don't want a major crisis all over the world. If the truth were to be known, why would they hide it? Why does every newspaper article either have a lie of omission or of a lie of commission? Never telling the truth. Magazine articles, radio, TV, nothing. I have to be very well orchestrated, it seems to me. Why didn't Amy Goodman stop James Hansen when he talked about the stuff that he was
talking
about?
Amy Goodman can't talk about nuclear on Democracy Now, or she will never be on television.
Well,
that's the reality.
Make that choice. On it. She should make that choice.
Yeah, would but this is the thing. Look, I have, I'm, what, you know, where am I talking right now? You know, I mean, the difference is we're marginalized as the third wave environmentalists, is just like monkey wrenchers, people that are just willing to believe any radical idea. And frankly, in lots of ways I am, because you know what? The story we're being told does not sound like the truth. So that leaves us open to, like, hey, like me, I've surmised that I think that the CIA has been manipulating and working over Donald Trump for a long time. And he's in full play still right now. And whether he was a willing or unwilling victim, I don't know. I think he's too stupid. They wouldn't have told him the truth. He couldn't have helped but spill the beans.
It's the CIA that is behind Donald Trump.
That was my harebrained idea, yeah. That's the only answer I could come up with. Because he bought his property from the paint company that was, at a time, his very first big property he bought in New York was bought from a paint company that was a front for the CIA. And at a time when the economy collapsed, like, really? His dad had connections. His lawyer, Cohn, whose son is now his top advisor, helped make the deal happen. And he's had shady deals. He's run his life like a freaking mafia don. I mean, honestly, he's a shady character. But, you know, this is the neoliberal agenda. This is the thing. It is really, when people look at me like I'm sort of wild-eyed, but honestly, it looks to me like we live in a banana republic. Literally, this is the banana republic with the Republicans permanently in charge. They don't walk around in boot leather straps and military uniforms like they did in South America. They let the other goons do that. But, you know, they still do it. And so everybody is not allowed to talk about nuclear contamination, period, because you want to know what? It is really bad. The reality is, it really is. It is really, but we don't have to freak out, because guess what? We're still living it. At least we can know where we're at. Like, we have the people working in the EPA, there are some honest people who will tell and talk when they're in these contaminated communities. They will tell the truth. They will say, this is the evidence we have. But they don't have all of the facts. They say, you know, you have to kind of go look for it yourself. And the reality is, we do not test in our country or around the world, really, honestly, for nuclear pollution. The children in Fukushima right now, I'm sure you share my rage. Their parents are being told they're getting thyroid cancer not because of the nuclear contamination.
I know, and people believe it. People believe it. It's so horrible. It's beyond evil what is going on.
Well, this is the thing. This is why they work hard. This is one of the messages about the light, right, that I got from Doreen Virtue. I don't know. I mean, I have to say that I'm kind of... spiritually, I really believe, since I've heard this, I never heard of it in words, but I have believed this for a long time, nature's right. And I just learned about it in school, but it's basically where we're not separated from the earth. We're not different from a rock. We don't have inherent superiority over dominion on the planet. I think that's where we've gone astray for a long time. We've used the earth as our assets. And this whole thing back to mitigation banking. We are assets. They have mitigated us. We are worth a stock. We have lives. Lives are considered assets. No kidding. It's true. Mitigation banking has given an asset to all the species, all the creatures.
Look, nuclear power at rock bottom is a moral issue, period.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, Ian Seely came out in 2014 that said, children who live near nuclear power plants have more incidences of leukemia than children who don't. That's the end of the story. There's nothing else to be said about that. The minute anybody hears that statement, wouldn't you think if they were sane, they would think, shut them all down this second. Don't even listen to what I'm saying. Just shut them down fast now. Children who live near nuclear power plants, this is statistically significant, have more cases of leukemia than children who don't live near them. You know, the chase is always about cancer and leukemia for our kids. What else are we talking about? Real estate.
You know what else they're not studying that Dr. John Goffman did? Diabetes is directly caused from nuclear contamination. It is directly caused. He saw a direct correlation to an increase in diabetes among especially children and schizophrenia developing Dr. John Goffman and Arthur Tamplin in the 50s and the 50s and 60s, when they were like assigned by the government to study, they were charged with one of three things: to find a good use for the waste, like to show that it didn't cause us harm and we could just go willy-nilly creating this stuff. Second, their second charge, if they couldn't show that, then just showed it didn't harm anybody. Just, you know, that was their second hope, just neutral. And what happened was they found the third one, that it is in fact detrimental. And what they found was off the charts, frightened them both. And they both felt like, oh my God, this is what we've been involved in all these years. And they took a massive reversal. Although John Goffman was always an arch proponent until much later in his life of even nuclear weapons. He thought that was a good deterrent because it was so harmful that nobody would want to ever use it. He did not believe we should use it at all until we really understood the source, not stop creating more of it. We had plenty of it produced after World War II. We could have just stopped then for scientific purposes.
Look, Union of Concerned Scientists, that lofty piece of nothing, which goes around saying how bad nuclear power is. On their website, they say, but they're still doing research and they believe in future nuclear technology.
Right. The Union of Concerned Scientists, according to Donna Gilmore, as she's reported on this show, Dave Lochbaum works for them. And he is responsible for he's the person responsible for us having these half-inch thick containers that now at least they are making double containers, but they're still a half an inch thick. Because of the weight, he says that they have a greater risk of being dropped if they're super heavy, if they're thick like they use in Europe and elsewhere around the world. So he encourages the whole tech thin cast containers for nuclear waste. So
What does Lochbaum say?
He says, according to, you can see it on Donna Gilmore's channel, and I recommend everybody going there. To SantaOnofreeSafety.org, and you can it talks about storage. I think it says storage waste. The whole tech.
Bad point.
Yes, Lochbaum has recommended that the government use these thinner containers because they're too heavy. The thick, safer containers are too heavy to move, and he sees a greater risk at them being dropped. So that's why we have the small one. That's why we're the only country we store our waste so recklessly in this country. It's unbelievable.
They keep on making more of it. They talk about renewables and they keep on making more nuclear waste. There is no safe place to store it, Lonnie. I mean, Helen said it beautifully. I saw it a few days ago. She says, so even the heavy dry cast, which everybody is screaming and mourning for now, only lasts 100 years. And nuclear radioactive waste will last for millions of years. And I suggest that everybody go see the film Containment. There is no safe way to store radioactive waste ever. End of sentence. I mean, the whole thing is, that's why the Union of Concerned Scientists say it's just another wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah. Well, they're obviously paid for by the by somebody. It's like that, it's like all of them. It's like burn, it's the whole system. Like, at what point are these people going to have their courage and find their humanity and start talking honestly? They know, like Bernie Sanders, he admits he knows, but for him to negotiate down and say, oh yeah, 40 years is good, that's kind of bullshit. Like, we have a massive emergency on our hands. Unless, you see, this is where I come back, Sheila, to my theory, the one drop of plutonium. The one drop of plutonium in all of us is enough. It do, they don't even care about it because it's everywhere. So they don't care because what they don't get is that it's cumulative. It really does matter how much more you create. This is why Dr. Caldicott is jumping up and down. Where did you see her, by the way?
Where did I was?
You said you saw her.
Well, no, I saw her a year ago, maybe whenever it was, several months ago. The quote she made, I saw her online. That thing I
Oh,
just, she was
okay.
in,
I was
she
like,
was in
oh,
here.
did I miss where she was? You know?
Well, she was in Cambridge within the last year, and I did get a chance to
Well,
see her
she
in
was
person.
at our university. She was on Skype at the PELC, the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference, in September. She did a Skype conference with Donna Gilmore, and myself, and Mimi Gurman. I put that together at the University of Oregon. I'm gonna
Nice.
request it again because people need to, we need to start hearing about the nuclear waste and the nuclear contamination, and we have to have a grip on what we're gonna do about it. We cannot, just because they're not willing to talk about it doesn't mean we have to abide by it because
We're going to
they're.
bury it in the lawn of the White House. We're going to bury it in the lawns of every congressperson who ever voted for it, including those in the Supreme Court, the NRC, the EPA. We're going to bury it in their yards.
Well, let me ask you this.
You don't
Have
like
you
that?
heard about the new, did you hear about, do you know about the new, what they're trying to
Protest law.
do? No, they're trying to sell nuclear waste to private industries now. That's in the House, that's in the Senate right now.
To do what? To do what with? They pay frying pans with and toasters? They used to do that with waste. What
Well,
are they selling it?
they want to sell the nuclear waste. Congress wants to sell nuclear waste to private industry because it's a cheaper way to go.
Oh dear God.
Yeah. And I think it was on Lincoln. Who was it? Yeah. 2000 nuclear waste informed. Yeah, policy amendments 2000. Yeah, it's in the House. And I think it actually passed and it's gone to the Senate. Or maybe it's still there. Let's see. Submitted to the environment on all actions, House and Energy. Nuclear Waste Informed Consent Act. In making an expenditure, nuclear waste fund incurred DOA disposing certain affected facilities. No, this isn't it. I got to find it. I read it the other day. It was on Lincoln Chafis's, or no, it wasn't. It was on somebody from Northeast, one of their pages, and I couldn't believe it. It was on a tweet. He posted this thing. I'll go back and look at my Twitter page because I was like, he was like, this looks like a cheap way to go. And I'm like, are you insane? This is like, we're talking like we'll have a million new dirty bombs around the world. You start selling nuclear waste to private industry. Well, they'll put it in
Not
our
even.
plates, our dishes.
Bonnie, you're way up on your research, better than I am. I never even saw this. It's like, oh God, if I think of these plumes, they must lie in bed at night thinking, what's the most evil we can do?
Well, no, they want to do the cheapest they can do because of what I consider to be the one drop plutonium. What I do is follow, I follow the elected officials on Twitter because this is how they respond. This is where they're at. You want to hear where they're at? They Twitter. Even if you look at C-SPAN, they list their Twittering. They get off and they start Twittering. Them and their aides, he'll like say this and say that, and they start Twittering. He pays people to Twitter. It's totally insane. But this is how they communicate, and you can actually communicate with them. And although I did get kicked off of Twitter for a day because I taunted Hillary Clinton too much.
God.
I did, because she was like talking about making a comeback. I'm like, leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Like, really, you guys have done enough harm. Like, no.
Listen, it's pretty bad when Hillary's dad is saying she's part of the resistance.
Wasn't that the funniest? It is bad. It is bad. Yes, Sheila. So what do you suggest? What do you suggest to do? What's your
Well, I talked about it last week, and I'll talk about it another time. Not only that we don't have time today, but I want to do it in a different way about everybody has to conserve. We really have to conserve. We have to conserve. We have to become organic vegans, as many of us as can, must do that. Move toward vegetarianism, then move toward vegan. We will save the planet, and we will not have to worry about any of these horrible creatures and people and liars and omitters and committers against truth that we've talked about today. We won't need them at all because we ourselves will be doing it.
There's a kid in one of my classes that said he's in another class, and it's a statistics class, and they showed that if people would just stop eating beef, that would
It's
help.
not, it's a good beginning. It's not enough.
Right. It's not enough, but that's a good first transition. If people could just do that. But this is the thing. It's not that they are not willing to, because of the one drop of plutonium, because everybody knows we're super screwed at an unconscious level. We're not talking about the nuclear waste, but everybody knows it's there. Like once they recognize it, though, because I will tell you this, as I said before the show, really 10 years ago, I had no idea. I thought they handled it correctly.
Well, they lie to us on purpose, and if you tell lies often enough, people believe it, especially if the truth is hard to come by. But, the trace is leukemia and other cancers and radioactive waste, and our children are going to be dying. That's the trace. I mean, imagine building these things that the radioactive waste lasts for millions of years. I mean, how can any sane person say or do such an act?
It is
So
beyond me.
we need to keep on talking about those who, and of us who know, for whatever reasons, have the veil taken away from our eyes and our faces, and are able to see the truth about nuclear. We have to talk and talk and talk and write about it, scream about it, whisper, sing, dance, just nonstop, keep at it. Because I agree with you, people don't know the truth. They really don't.
And that's why I don't think we need to like go after people and call them names. And although this is the thing, the name calling is a tactic of abusers, so they have trained people to do this. I mean, it's
Call out people who are telling lies. I do think it's good to call out people who are telling lies, but it's not enough. It's not enough.
no it's not enough. But I this is where I really lean into this idea of our light, that there is a dark element on this planet, but in order for us, we really do have to I mean, I hate to put it this way, put on God's armor. Like, we do have to put on our integrity. We have to put on honor. We have to decide we're going to have our courage. We are really going to stand up for what we know to be right and correct. I mean, that is
Well,
the thing. And walk in love. Like, love is really, we have to really decide and choose peace, that we're going to pick peace over war.
Lonnie, I agree with everything you say here, but I also know that, for example, when somebody rapes somebody or incests somebody, we have to call them out. We can't just say we forgive them. We
Oh,
have
I
to call.
agree. I agree
Oh,
with
that's
you.
the
The
first step
police
that
state has got to
gets
end. The
rid
rape culture has got to end. I
But no,
completely
not just.
agree.
Culture. Now, I'm saying that that's why it's important to call out all the people who are for nuclear power and who are in huge, huge, huge positions of power. Most of them we've talked about today, not all, straight white men with their white skin privilege and their male gender privilege, using it, using their power. I'm not willing to be silent about people who are doing that for the planet. I don't want somebody I love to come home to me and say,
We've
oh,
got
look what
5 seconds. So thanks for joining us, Sheila. And I agree with you. Put your courage beat on. I agree. We need to speak out.
This is Ozzy Skateboard, and you're listening to UCY.TV.